Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, presented on Sunday, May 4th, 2025, is by Sue Andrews on the topic of On Loneliness.
So I had decided last year that I'd like to do a talk on loneliness at the fellowship. It's a concept that has intrigued me for many, many decades because I just feel like there's so much loneliness around us. I brought a bunch of books I've read over the last couple decades. I'm going to refer to a couple of them, but these are actually some really good books. And if you are interested in borrowing any of them, please let me know. So, loneliness, what is it and why is it important? I have a couple definitions that I'll offer. One is kind of social science language, that loneliness is a subjective internal state. I'm wondering if there's some water. It's the distressing experience that results from perceived isolation or unmet needs between an individual's preferred and actual experience. Or as Eric Kleinenberg, and I'll get to him in a moment, says, I think of loneliness as our body's signal to us that we need better, more satisfying connections with other people. Many social scientists, physicians, pundits, and others have said that we have an epidemic of loneliness in the U.S., as well as other parts of the world. Great Britain actually has a minister of loneliness and has had it for 5 years. They see it as such a big problem in Great Britain. So the question is, who's lonely? And I think you're seeing some of the solution right here. No spoiler alerts, but so who's lonely? As sociology professor and author Eric Kleinenberg, who wrote Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone, the concept of loneliness has been around since God created the world. After all, he asks, wasn't Eve created to keep Adam from getting lonely? And he notes that a number of thousand years after Adam and Eve were created, Aristotle said that a man who is isolated and who is unable to share in the benefits of political association, or who has no need to share because he is self-sufficient, is not part of life, and is therefore neither man nor beast. The Greek poet Theocritus said that man will ever need to stand with man. He didn't know the feminist language, but. And Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius said, human beings are social animals. And finally, the same Kleinenberg that I mentioned previously points out that both critics and advocates of solitary confinement agree that it is a living death. While Kleinenberg extols the virtues of living alone in much of his work, other social scientists and scientific studies disagree. Loneliness and resultant isolation can negatively impact one's health and result in premature death and disease, and I'll talk more about that. In 2000, Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone in America, and the rest of the title is The Collapse and Revival of American Community, made a huge impact on me. As someone who had studied and worked in public health, it seemed so obvious that our social connections were weakening, especially in certain subpopulations. And here was a guy who called it out. Yay, Bob Putnam. In grad school in the 80s, I had the pleasure of studying under Dr. Len Syme at Berkeley, who is considered the father of social epidemiology. He and another elderly fellow, Professor Heinrich Blum, are well known for their work on what are called the psychosocial determinants of health, which have fundamentally changed medicine and public health and continue to shape research, practice, and public policy today in our nation and around the world. And anybody who's known me since at least 1984 will know that I talk about the social determinants a lot. They're very, very impactful in our lives. So according to Blum's model, the four key things that affect our health, the four key determinants, are environment, lifestyle, heredity, and medical care. These factors in varying degrees influence our overall health and well-being. So let's take a look at them. The first one, environment, encompasses the physical and social and economic surroundings in which people live and work. So it includes things like air and water quality, housing, community safety, and access to resources like clean water and nutritious food. Next is lifestyle, which refers to the choices and behaviors that individuals make that affect their health, such as diet, physical activity, smoking, alcohol, and social connections. There's also heredity, which refers to the genetic factors inherited from your parents, kind of the heart, the hand that you're dealt, which can predispose some people to certain health conditions. And finally, there's medical care, which includes the accessibility, affordability, and quality of healthcare services, including preventative and curative services, as well as access to information and support related to health. You can imagine that when Blum published his work, it didn't sit well with the doctors, because what he said was, and he uses a three-dimensional football and shows the impact of each of these determinants on health in the center. And he said medical care only provides 5% of the impact on your health. Well, that's an interesting statement, given that our country spent $4.9 trillion with a T, or $14,570 per person, representing over 17% of our gross domestic product in 2023. So what are we buying and what impact does it have? Heredity has a small but considerable impact, and it's about the luck of the draw. But the biggies overall were environment and lifestyle. And these first two determinants of health account for close to 80% of the impact on our population's health. And I will point out that in public health, we're talking about population health. We're not just talking about me or you, but we're talking about how do these things affect us overall. So, spoiler alert, where do you think loneliness fits in? Loneliness. Yeah, it's in the 80%. So back to Bob Putnam and bowling alone. He made an observation that people used to bowl in leagues with other people, but that now, and this was back in 2000, we bowl by ourselves. And the book and a film, which I'll tell you about, has a bunch of very nerdy pictures of Bob Putnam as a young teen on his bowling league. It's just lovely. It really brings some memories. So today, in 2000, we bowl by ourselves. And interestingly, here in Bennington, we can't bowl at all because they knocked down the bowling alley. But that's another story. So drawing on vast new data that revealed America's changing behavior, Putnam showed us how we had become increasingly disconnected from one another and how social structures, whether it be the PTA or the church or other faith communities or political parties, had disintegrated. Until the publication of Bowling Alone, no one had described the harm that these broken bonds had wrought on our physical and civic health. nor had anyone lifted up the power the bonds had in creating a society that is happy, healthy, and safe. So Putnam is quite a man. He went on from Bowling Alone to spend his entire academic career studying this topic. And for those of you who are interested, there was a recently released film called Join or Die, which will be shown, and it's all about Bob's work and the kind of what we can do to change things. It will be shown here in Bennington on May 14th. And if anybody's interested, I can give you more information. This is a project that Vermont Public Radio is doing around the state. And when they first advertised it, I noticed that neither Bennington nor Brattleboro were included. So I really rode their behinds for about a month. And they finally agreed to hold a viewing here in Bennington. You can also, if you want to, watch the movie on Netflix, which Bill and I recently did. But that kind of misses the point about connecting with others. But it is out there. So we know people are lonely, but who are they and how many of them are there? According to recent Gallup data, approximately 20% of American adults report feeling lonely a lot of the day yesterday. This translates to roughly one in every five people. In early 2024, the Healthy Minds Monthly poll from the American Psychiatric Association found that 30% of adults said that they had experienced feelings of loneliness at least once a week over the past year. In addition, 30% of Americans in the age cohort of 18 to 34 said they were lonely every day or at least several times a week. And at the end of the pandemic, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy issued an 80-page health advisory that noted that one in every two Americans mentions being lonely. He said, "Our connection to one another is a foundation on which we build a healthy society. As that foundation has crumbled and weakened, we've seen that we are suffering across the board." So, is loneliness an epidemic? It was under Vivek Murthy, who served as both our 19th and 21st Surgeon General, that an advisory entitled "Our Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation" was published in 2023. It's an 80-page advisory, the kind of thing that comes out and is supposed to be sort of a platform for making some changes in our community. The document came out of a listening tour that Dr. Murthy took around the U.S., where he heard stories from many Americans about how lonely they felt. People of all ages and socioeconomic backgrounds from every corner of the country shared that they felt isolated, invisible, and insignificant. Many people reported that they had no one in their life they felt they could confide in. Although risk may differ across various indicators of social disconnection, currently studies find that while the highest rate of social isolation is found among, guess who, older people, younger adults are almost twice as likely to report feeling lonely. So it's just a kind of a small distinction there. The rate of loneliness among our young adults has increased every year since 1976. In addition, lower income people are more likely to be lonely than those with higher incomes. 63% of people with incomes under $50,000 per year, 63%. Say they're lonely, which is 10 percentage points higher than those who earn more than $50,000 per year. Older people lose their long-term partners as well as their friends, to death and infirmity. When people in all of these groups get lonely, they are the least able to get adequate support or medical support. People from all these groups live lives that are more likely to be unstable, and so are their relationships. These data don't suggest that individual or demographic factors inherently generate loneliness or isolation. Rather, the data enables us to understand the different socioeconomic, political, and cultural mechanisms that may indicate higher risk in certain groups. Murthy talks of having a light bulb moment when he realized on his tour that social disconnection was far more common than he had realized. In the advisory, Murthy and his team explore the concepts of loneliness, social isolation, and social connection. These concepts, we've already talked about loneliness. Tate helped us out with that. Social connection can be defined as the structure, the function, and the quality of our relationships with others. Social isolation is objectively having few social relationships, social roles, group memberships, and infrequent social interaction. There's significant research and data that show that the lack of social connection poses a significant risk for individual health and longevity. Loneliness and social isolation increase the risk for premature death by 26 and 29% respectively. So being lonely can have that big an impact on whether you live or die. More broadly, lacking social connection can increase the risk for that premature death as much as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Well, that's a very interesting sort of a physiology comparison. We all know how bad smoking is for our health, but I think that's 3/4 of a pack, if I remember. I think there's 20 cigarettes in a pack. Does anybody know? Anyway, yep. So 3/4 of a... Okay, we have some former smokers there. 3/4 of a pack of cigarettes a day has as big an impact, or loneliness has as big an impact on your health and risk of dying early as 3/4 of a pack of cigarettes. In addition, poor or insufficient social connection is associated with increased risk of disease, including a 29% increased risk of heart disease, and a 32% increased risk of stroke. And interestingly, those are the things that are also highly correlated with cigarette smoking. So it's very interesting. It's also associated with increased risk for anxiety, depression, and dementia. Having fun yet? And the lack of social connection may increase susceptibility to viruses and respiratory illness, which we've been going through for the last 6 years. So while the jury is still out about whether loneliness and isolation is epidemic, it's clear that they're both prevalent and that they're causing significant harm. Even Kleinenberg, who I mentioned earlier and who argues that we do not have an epidemic, agrees that loneliness and isolation are harmful. He also notes, and this is a good point, that occasional and transitory feelings of loneliness can be productive. His explanation is that it is a biological signal to ourselves that we need to build stronger social bonds. In an article from the New York Times, Big Science, in 2018, identified two major causes of loneliness. One is that throughout the world, over the past decades, we have embraced a culture of individualism. More people are living alone. There's some incredible trends about women not marrying and living alone and saying they're better off. Living alone and aging alone than ever. labor unions, civic associations, neighborhood organizations, religious groups, and other traditional sources of social solidarity are in steady decline. Increasingly, we all feel like we're on our own. The other possible cause that he mentions is the rise of communications technology, including smartphones, social media, and the internet. I'm sure this is not new. A decade ago, companies like Facebook, Apple, and Google pledged that their products would help create meaningful relationships and communities. Instead, we've used the media system to deepen existing divisions at both the individual and the group levels. We may have thousands of friends and followers on Facebook and Instagram, but when it comes to human relationships, it turns out there's no substitution for building them the old-fashioned way in person.